Welcome to the But Here We Go podcast, coming at you from But Here We Go Studios. It is just Allie and myself today, the original hosts, the co-hosts. Special guest appearances. At least we don't think so.
Could you imagine if like people like clicked play like to listen to you know the week's episode and it's like there's no But Here whatsoever and we just have guest hosts?
Oh man, that would be wild. That's exciting.
Let us know if you'd like to do a guest host where literally you could do the whole thing and I'll just put it on our channel.
Yeah, that sounds exciting.
I think we're just really wanting to throw people for a loop. Export it one day or import it rather. Who knows? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I just finished a walk for everybody if they wanted to know. It was supposed to be a covert secret mission to get Allie flowers. Apparently she knew the whole time.
No, I'm so sorry. You're very predictable. I very much appreciate it.
I want to know if people think that I'm predictable. Not that anybody's going to write in, but we do have a few fans who do comment and send us things. So let me know. Am I predictable?
I could make a poll on my Instagram account and ask my Instagram followers.
And then I'll share it on my Instagram and we could see what everybody thinks.
Right. I think you're very predictable. I think it's hard because I think that people who don't know you very well, because you are a man of few words, would say that you are unpredictable.
Exactly. I am unpredictable.
But I think you're predictable.
You never know what I'm
going
to do.
I did predict, like I knew that you were proposing to me. That was very predictable.
Nobody ever knows what I'm going to do next.
Do you want to be unpredictable?
Yeah.
Why? Wow. Why? Your predictability is what makes you safe.
I'm not safe.
Danger Joe.
This makes me think of that episode of Boy Meets World. Where Corey and his buddy, what's his buddy's name?
Fudge. I know the actor's name. Sean. Yeah.
So Sean had the two girlfriends and he was like, oh, I need somebody to like hold on to one, like have her in the bullpen. And she gives him to Corey, like, hey, Corey, you should date her. You should be her boyfriend for a while. And the reason he did that was because Corey was predictable and because he was safe. So the moral of that story to all those young boys who were like, oh, I want to be cool, I want to be hip, was to not be safe and predictable.
Right. So.
But that's a bad biblical message.
Right. But I didn't even know that you watched Boy Meets World, because usually like childhood things you have no concept of. So that was very unpredictable
that's
for me.
TGIF.
Thank goodness it's Friday. I think it's thank God, unless you're Mormon.
I mean, that's what I would say. Thank God it's Friday.
This is unrelated.
We don't say TGIF anymore.
No. Would you consider the word frickin' a cuss word?
I think that it's a cop-out word.
That didn't answer the question. Do you think it's a cuss word? Because I was listening to a like well-known Christian podcast, and they were... like say they labeled the word frickin' or freakin' a cuss word, and I thought that was funny because that word is very much involved in my vocabulary and I don't cuss at all, never have, and so the fact that that is considered a cuss word now, I thought that was pretty funny. But I've never considered it a cuss word. I've always considered it, to your point, a cop-out word. It's what you say when you don't want to cuss, because that is like the word that Mormons are allowed to say.
They could say
frick.
Oh, frick.
Yeah.
I think it is the idea of cuss words is fluid. Because right now, people cuss all the time. I mean, I don't cuss all the time. But in general, cussing has become just part of life.
Right. Go ahead.
Are you going to talk about that study?
I was just going to talk about that TV show on Netflix that I think Nicolas Cage hosted about the history of words.
Oh, yeah.
That was really interesting because, I mean, to your point, it is just a word. And
yeah. Like female dog?
Right. That is the what's the fancy way to say, like, the study of words? The
wordology.
Sure. Like the history of words, like most of the words that are like considered bad now were not always considered bad, or yeah, like there's like normal. An, you know, it just depends on what the culture says and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But I think we can, I mean, the way that you and I approach cuss words is that we want the things that come out of our mouth to be uplifting and to be, you know, good and true. Yeah. And typically cuss words are not those things, because typically cuss words are like expletives that are derogatory against like a certain person.
Yeah.
I would say it's more like a graphic.
Yeah, meant in a graphic way.
Right, which is not typically how I talk.
Yeah.
But frickin' is for me like the word like. It just like gets thrown in there for some extra zhuzh. Though in certain friend groups, I am known to drop a cuss word for a dramatic effect.
Yeah,
but
not
it's
okay.
Very few and far between, and it's only in text messages.
Yep.
But it's not okay. In person. But sometimes I just want to, like, be, like you said, be unpredictable, because people think it's funny when it's coming from me because they know I would never say that in real life. So I'm sure I could probably pray about
that.
Yeah,
you could work
confess.
On that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to work on that
right.
with you.
Right.
Anyway, what I was going to say, there was a study that I think was, maybe we saw it on that Nicolas Cage show, where cussing is one of those things that releases endorphins,
yes.
but it's one of those things that it's only if you don't do it often. So if you are dropping F-bombs like in every single sentence, it loses its dopamine effect. But if you are like doing a cold plunge for the first time ever and you want to last like 2 minutes, if you just start swearing a bunch,
right?
You
I think
just start dropping
they had
the
like,
F-bombs then.
Right. They had two people and they each had to stick their hand in like a bowl of ice water. One person was allowed to cuss and the other person wasn't allowed to cuss. And the person who was allowed to cuss and cuss lasted significantly longer than the person who didn't.
But I'm curious, with a study like that, this is we're
there are
obviously
a lot
not
of,
talking about
there are
about
a lot
this.
Of variables.
I am curious if there is somebody who typically does not cuss. Like, are they the ones who put their hands in the water and were not cussing? Or was it somebody who typically does cuss and they were told, you can't cuss?
That's a good thought. I don't think, to how I remember this experiment, I don't think it mattered if you were a cusser or not. I think those words and expletives are cathartic in general. And in my opinion, again, for someone who doesn't cuss, I think the reason why I say, because if I like stub my toe, I will often say frick, but it's not because I'm trying not to say the F word. It's I'm releasing the scream that is inside of me from stubbing my toe. And that is like and funny enough, now that I think about it, that is just a natural sound that my mouth makes, which is funny because Jacob started speech therapy last month and that is his preferred sound, is the F fricative. It's called a fricative, where his preference is to make that
sound.
And so I do think there is something innate about the F sound. And so that would only make sense to me that it would be cathartic to, you know, because I think it's like, if that is a very easy word to say and you're not, and you like, you're, like, basically, if you're in pain and you're trying to release the pain, but you can't, you're told you cannot do something to release the pain, I think it makes it harder to withstand the pain.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So
why can't you just, like, scream?
I think screaming would help,
too.
I would
just scream.
Right. I would like to see a comparative of, like, someone who could
somebody
scream but not cuss.
Cussing.
And then someone who could cuss.
Yeah.
But not scream.
I would be
really
curious.
I feel like the screaming and the cussing goes hand in hand.
Would come out. Like, is it going to be like a demonic scream? Is it going to be like
a scream giggle?
Little,
a giggle
a little,
scream?
A little girl, like high pitched scream, like, ah. Or is it going to be like that person is dying kind of scream?
Do you want to do we can do the experiment. We can put it on a podcast.
No, that's a
that
video.
That wouldn't be fun. That would
that's
be,
a
yeah.
Video
I'm,
kind of thing.
Hear me say this, faithful 12 listeners. We have no intention of making video content for this podcast.
That's what you think.
That's what I know.
I'm gonna start making video content.
No, no one wants
put
to
it
see
on
that.
The Two We Go Media.
No,
that's, everybody wants to see that.
No.
But it's
put
not gonna,
a poll on your Instagram.
I'm gonna walk around saying, "Hey, do you cuss? Why?"
Oh goodness. Okay, are you ready for like the planned content? Or did you have more you wanted to say?
Is there something more I wanted to say about cussing?
Did you see any crazy people? Because on your walk, since it's St. Patrick's Day. I don't remember us celebrating it multiple weekends in years past.
So that is true, but...
Hold on, we have to be real.
What? I don't have my phone.
Your phone's right there.
Where?
It's right there in front of your face.
Oh.
Okay, sorry, guys.
Hold on. We're being real.
You want to know that what platform I have as many followers as our podcast? It's Be Real. Ready, set, go. Okay.
Oh, now I remember what I was going to say before we got on all that. On my walk, I was listening to the Bear Grease podcast.
As you do.
As I do. And Clay Newcomb, the main host of the show, made this comment because they do a podcast and then the next week they do like talking about the podcast, which is a typical group of people. But it's like a
just like people commenting on the podcast.
Yeah, there's like four of them that are typically.
Oh, is it like an interview and then people comment?
No, no. Okay. So the way that the podcast is, it's
don't
like
don't go into too much detail.
It's like an anthology type thing. Like right. It's two or three episodes all talking about a thing.
Got it.
And then every other week they do this thing called the render because it's Bear Grease and they're rendering down the content of that. I think it's clever.
It's clever, but I hate it at the same time.
And so then these four people, Clay, his wife, usually one or two other guys that are always there, and then, you know, other people sometimes, they all talk about what they thought about that episode and then just kind of whatever's going on. Well, this was a render episode, and Clay was like, he said something along the lines of like, I'm so happy I can have my wife on my podcast. Who else do you know who has their wife on their podcast? And I was like, well, you know what, Clay? I'm actually going to be going home and doing
you
a podcast with my wife.
Or
no, I don't have his phone number. And he's got his DMs closed on Instagram.
Right, and he is, how many followers does he have on his podcast?
Too many.
Right. But to your point, couples who podcast together.
Stay together.
For sure.
Yeah. So right. I secretly want to be Clay.
Okay, Clay Newcomb. I know nothing about hunting, so I don't know how much I can contribute
that's fine.
To that. Misty Newcomb
doesn't know any. I mean, I'm sure she knows something about hunting, but she is not a hunter.
Oh, then what does she contribute on the podcast?
This is the
witty
render.
Banter.
So they talk about what they thought about the last episode.
Oh, okay.
It's not all about hunting.
Okay, well, okay.
But they run a little homestead.
Cute.
He has mules that he trains and keeps up.
Side note.
And Misty has a garden. And I think she's a principal of a high school, maybe.
Oh.
I don't know.
That's
something like
too
that.
Busy. That's too
they
much.
They are all sorts of busy.
Okay. So before we were getting off on tangents, I had planned content. A friend of ours was asking me about chickens and backyard chickens because we used to have backyard chickens.
Yeah, we got
to
get more.
But in his city, I guess in the colony, they require that you have, it's like 80 square feet per chicken.
Oh, that's cool.
In a coop. Like interior living space. And I was like, unless he misunderstood it, because that sounded like a massive chicken coop. That is way, the chickens don't need
wrong.
That much space.
80 square feet total, or he thinks 80 square feet per chicken?
No, he screenshot it. It said per chicken. And I was like, that.
I think there's something.
Incorrect, because I was like, that seems like no one's going to have backyard chickens in the colony.
80 square feet.
And then you
feet.
Had to have it like 100 or no, 200 feet away from
any other enclosure.
Mm-hmm.
From your house, too?
Yeah. And I was like,
the colony's got some dumb rules.
I was like, who's going to, unless you like live on a farm, which I don't know how many farms are still in the colony, you ain't going to have no chickens.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I think what I read is 2 square feet. Like enclosed space
that would make
is
sense
normal
right.
per chicken.
This was at least 20, if not 80.
And And on top of that, for that enclosed coop space where they spend the night, you really don't want to go above like 5 square feet, because then there's not enough room. If you've got 5 square feet per chicken, they can't actually stay close enough, and they can't stay warm enough,
right,
in the
cold,
in like the really bad cold.
Right.
So
someone needs to get, the colony needs to get on that.
Colony, you are not chicken friendly.
No. Boo. Okay, anyway, are we ready?
I guess so.
Okay. Holy Grail and the Ark of the Covenant thought to be located under an English house.
Fake news. No way. Did he find them and put them in his basement? Is
Who's
that
he?
What it is? The guy who owns the house.
Why does it have to be a guy? The house is actually owned by a woman. So,
the family who owns the house.
A respected historian believes lost treasure, which could include the Ark of the Covenant and Holy... Wait, okay. Which could include... Maybe lying underneath a manor house near Burton. David Adkins, an anthropologist and historian who made headlines when he tracked down a 10,000-year-old skull named Greta, believes the lost treasure of the Knights Templar could be concealed in a labyrinth of tunnels and chambers underneath Sinai Park House. Immediate thoughts.
Why is it called Cyanide Park?
No, not Cyanide. Sinai.
Sinai.
Like from the Bible. Mount
okay.
Sinai.
Okay.
Yeah, not Sinai.
Well, that makes total sense.
That
why
that sounds like a murder mystery.
Yeah, that's why I was confused.
That really
like,
bad one.
Is that where they discovered cyanide? But no, Sinai, that makes a whole lot more sense. Like, of course, if you're going to have it anywhere in England, it's going to be in Sinai Park.
Okay, so full disclosure, I heard about the story when I was listening to this week's episode of the Holy Post. And so they included the link to the article. So that's the link that I'm looking at right now.
And it's fake news.
But it's called thebrighterside.news, which does not sound like a reputable news place.
The
but
bride
then,
or side?
You cannot hear me today. The brighter side.
Oh, the brighter
yes.
side.
But look at this picture of historian David Adkins, and you tell me if you think it's fake or not.
But he found...
Oh, gosh.
This is a guy who found a 10,000-year-old skull.
Allegedly.
Why is he standing in front of Stonehenge? What does Stonehenge have to do with Sinai Park?
I know,
Park?
But apparently he provided the picture. So it's wow. He's, it's giving him credit for the picture.
Wow. That
anyway.
Is wild.
Oh, they have an opening. They have a picture of the house. Anyway, do you think that the Ark of the Covenant is still out there? Because I think it's been destroyed. Like, I don't think that we're meant to find it. Like, God doesn't live in that thing anymore. It's not like Indiana Jones where...
It's true, he doesn't.
You know, spirits are coming out.
But...
Which...
But
go
hold
ahead.
On, hold on.
Don't make yeah, I'll hold stop on. My rant about that movie.
To me, the thing that I think everybody could relate to, because I think that's a little sacrilegious,
what?
The Ark of the Covenant and...
Oh, in Indiana
and,
Jones?
And Indiana
right.
Jones. That's a little sacrilegious. So I think what we could all relate to, maybe a little bit closer to what... Just imagine the Ark of the Covenant being more like the game Jumanji, where it comes to life and it can bring about crazy life change. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. That's what we see in
How
the Bible.
How is that not sacrilegious?
Well, that's the easiest way to help people understand and remember what the Ark of the Covenant was. Like a way that you could like think about it. But... Here's the thing. The game Jumanji, it wanted to be played. It wanted to be there. It wanted to be like it was this living, breathing thing, kind of like what the Ark of the Covenant is. So where was I going with that?
I don't know.
So to me, is the Ark of the Covenant... Okay, this is where I was going. Now I remember. So, the Ark of the Covenant, is it something that physically can be destroyed? I don't know. Or is it something that is not meant to be found?
I'm looking it up right now.
Now, I do agree. While you look that up, I'll just keep talking. I do agree that there's a big question, because God obviously is not living in the ark anymore. So what is it now? Is it just an empty box?
Right. So in ancient cosmology, like Egyptian, ancient Near Eastern, an ark is like a religious box that you would put like idols, or like where God would like live. So like the Ark of the Covenant is where the spirit of the God, or spirit of our God, Yahweh, resided inside of the temple, and then, you know, whatever the nomadic temple was. Fun fact.
It's a tabernacle.
Thank you, tabernacle. That's the word I was thinking of. Fun fact is the exact same Hebrew word, the only, like, the other time that it's used in the Hebrew scriptures is for the...
Jesus?
Noah's Ark.
Oh.
Okay, and so Noah's Ark, because, like, did you ever, like, Ark is not, it's not normal, it's not, like, a normal word for a boat.
I mean, that's what I call my boat.
An Ark, you don't have a boat.
I call it the Ark of Belmont.
Okay, well, think symbolically is... The Noah's Ark was a boat, but it was an ark. It was a religious container holding the image of God and carrying meaning Noah and his family, and carrying them to safety.
Okay.
And then do you know what Noah's name means in Hebrew?
God with us.
Rest.
Hmm. Where are we going with this? Tell me.
I don't know, but that's what I learned in one of my classes in the summer, and I just thought it was really cool. But yeah, it comes to rest on top of Mount Ararat. Anyway, no, I don't think God left the ark.
Yeah.
When they go into exile, God leaves his people and doesn't dwell or tabernacle with them any longer.
Yeah.
And so I don't think, I would assume that it was destroyed by either Assyria or the Babylonians upon exile. So I don't know why we're still looking for it. Like, it would be very, like, if that artifact survived, we would know about it. Or it's like, I don't know. I guess, like, I don't know where else it would be. Like, I think it was such a, unless people, like, the other surrounding nations didn't really care about the Hebrew Ark of the Covenant, so they didn't really keep tabs on it.
I don't think they would have kept tabs on it. Especially because once God is out of it, it kind of no longer has that value. Because remember, it was taken,
gold. It had a lot of gold.
Yeah, so it was probably taken
melted
apart.
Down. Yeah,
but it was there was that one, I forget exactly the story, but it was supposed to go with one of the kings back to their
temple,
their hometown, back to the temple.
Jerusalem.
And instead, it ended up in some random podunk little town, because that king didn't want to bring it back, because it was right after the dude touched it and he died. So instead, this little town is getting all of this wealth and prosperity because God is there with them.
What scripture reference is that?
I'm telling you, I don't know.
Well, I'm just saying, I think it's before my BSF study started, so I'm not quite familiar, but it was ringing some bells.
Yeah. Yeah. So to me, if God's not in the ark, now the ark's value really is only that gold.
Right.
So you don't have the ark sitting there and you're all of a sudden having the best crops of your life.
Right. The grail is something that I have found more confusing as to why people care about that. Because to my understanding, based on Indiana Jones, which Jake is in a phase right now, the Holy Grail is the cup that was used at the Last Supper, correct? Okay, so this is maybe where, like, my lack of knowledge about Catholicism comes into play.
I said yes, by the way. I nodded my head.
Is the reason why the Holy Grail is sought after? Because, like, in my mind, it's like, oh, that would be, like, a cool artifact. It doesn't, like, it. Okay. No one is debating whether or not Jesus existed. We know that he existed. So is it because in, like, Catholicism, the Eucharist is taken more seriously, to where, like, the wine and bread was like magically or metaphysically changed to blood and body, and that's why people want the cup, because they think the cup is magical? Like, I just don't understand why we want the cup so bad.
Well, if we're sticking to Indiana Jones, the Holy Grail is also the Fountain of Youth.
Right, but that's Indiana Jones.
That I'm talking make about any sense.
That doesn't. That's like combining two different,
two totally myths. Different things.
Right. So like why? Yeah. So I guess like that's. I guess I need to learn more about the Holy Grail. You don't seem to know the answer. Usually, no. You do know the answer.
Well, when it comes to archaeology, these old ancient artifacts, because people were all about the Shroud of Jesus as well.
Oh, the Shroud of Turin.
Yeah. That is literally, if it is in fact the shroud that was laid over Jesus's dead body, it's literally just a piece of fabric that was touching Jesus. Like, I get it. That's cool.
Can they take DNA off of it?
I think they tried. They've done carbon dating. I don't know if they tried getting DNA.
Maybe,
but I know they did right. carbon dating.
What do you think is the world, and I guess more specifically, religious people's obsession with like artifacts like that?
The only thing that I could think is that if you have something physical like that, then you can physically say, this is proof of Jesus. And somehow that physical proof must show that that religion is true. I mean, that's the only thing I could think.
Right. Because like, even if we could prove that was on Jesus's face, you can't prove that he rose again.
Except that he's not still under it.
I don't know. Someone could have given him a face mask and then left and taken it with them. I don't know.
But
you know, there's always, I mean, I guess my point is there will always be naysayers where like, yeah. No, like, you can give them as much physical evidence, but until they have that heart change, then yeah. Like, you know, no yeah. Shroud of Turin is going to change their mind.
Yeah. No Holy Grail.
No Holy Grail. No Ark of the Covenant.
And you know, do we even know if there's anything special about that Holy Grail?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't think,
like,
no.
Is it just a little clay cup?
Probably.
Or is it actually made of gold?
Oh, no. Well, it wasn't made out of gold at Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I think it was.
No, it was the most, so, oh my gosh.
It was the,
it was the humblest of cups.
Can we?
And it was made out of wood because he was a carpenter.
It was made out of wood?
Yeah, that's what
Are
they.
Are you sure it was made out of wood?
It's a line in the movie.
Oh.
I watched it recently, so okay. It's in my head.
Okay. Fair enough.
It was a couple of humble beginnings. We don't know anything about the cup. For all we know, they didn't use a cup. They used like a pottery shard. I don't know.
They probably didn't even have cups back then.
It could have been like the pitcher of wine that they passed back and forth.
Passing around a pitcher of
right.
wine.
Right. Like, we don't know.
Man. So. Can you imagine? That would be the equivalent of Jesus like going to a vineyard today saying, all right, guys, time for the Last Supper. We're passing around the bottle.
Taking swigs.
Let's get some rolls of sourdough in here and let's just pass around the bottle.
I say sourdough wasn't invented, was it?
I think it was the only thing that was invented.
It was a French baguette.
Well, sourdough and flatbreads.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it had to have been because they were always talking about the leaven. Beware of the Pharisees.
Right, but
leaven.
It was a Sabbath dinner, so I'm pretty sure there's pretty strict rules about what bread.
Yeah, so they did not have sourdough.
No,
dough.
They had, I'm pretty sure, yeastless bread on the Sabbath.
Non-leavened.
Right. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, no, they'd be passing around non. some non-leavened equivalent.
Right. Moving on. Yes?
Yeah, we can move on.
What are you going to say?
I was just thinking about the ridiculous ways people drink wine, you know, like passing around the bottle or...
I don't know. I don't drink.
You've probably never experienced
wine.
This, but there's a slap in the bag.
I've heard that term.
Yeah. So like if you have boxed wine, it's actually in a bag. Really, really cheap stuff. Won't even come in a box. It'll just be the bag. And... instead of like doing a keg stand,
you like
some people would do a keg stand,
right.
you would slap the bag, which is like you hold the bag up, you are just drinking it until you can't drink it anymore, and then you slap it for some reason.
I'm going to ask you a question that I'm going to regret because you're probably going to give me far too long of an explanation.
Okay.
Maybe you won't know. Maybe it'll be my lucky day.
Probably don't know.
You know the whole Bible verse about like old and new wineskins?
Yeah.
Okay. So like, I guess like new wineskins, I guess, will crack or they'll like let the wine out or something. They won't properly hold the wine, right? You want old wineskins.
Old wineskins won't hold the wine.
Old wineskins won't hold the wine. Okay, that sort of answers.
Are you asking why?
Well, because I thought it was like, I thought it was, it has to be an old wineskin. But then I was like, but then how do you make it old if you can't put anything in it to make it old?
That's a good question.
But you're saying it's new wineskins.
Yeah, the old wineskins, because during, and this is, I think way back then, you would pour it in and the fermentation process would make it like,
expand
out. So that expansion process can occur in new wineskins, but in old wineskins it can't because it's already been expanded and now it's gonna end up breaking.
Hold on, I'm gonna look at the, okay. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins or else the new wine will burst the wineskins and be spilled. And the wineskins will ruin, but new wine must be put into new wineskins. I think where I was confused is the new wine. Can old wine be put in old wineskins? Because it's done fermenting?
I mean, I guess. You could.
My lack of wine drinkage is hindering me.
I want to say that there is some type of, you know, biblical metaphor going on there.
No, 100% there is.
So maybe that metaphor doesn't go into the idea of
fermentation.
Old wine into old wineskins.
Are you being snippy?
Maybe we just don't go that far with it. Maybe Jesus stopped the metaphor. I don't know though. I'll ask him.
Yeah, you ask him.
I'll get clarification on that.
Speaking of difficult questions, our son has started, I mean, truthfully, he's often I feel like he's asked us really deep questions.
Like,
often.
Where do babies come from?
Like, well, that's a normal question. That was, yeah. But was it yesterday when he asked us, it was essentially in my mind, like, which came first, the chicken or the egg kind of question.
I do not remember him asking
that. He was like, when kids came around, like the first kids came around, like where were their parents to take care of them?
Yeah.
Do you remember that question? Do you remember how it was worded?
Yeah, he asked something about like the first people and he was like, where were their parents?
Right.
And we're like, well, Adam and Eve were the first people. And he was like, who were Adam and Eve's parents?
Right.
Like, oh, well.
Which is an interesting question. But I brought that up because, so we have a lot of Christian Science books, which I always hate saying Christian Science because there is a denomination of Christianity called Christian Science, and I really don't know what they believe. But anyway, we have a bunch of science books from Christian perspectives because you're a geologist and I lack science background, and so we want to foster like a love of science. But most of the science books that we have are coming from the evolutionary side, like Christian evolutionary side of science, as like versus a more fundamentalist side of science. So he asked that question, and the next day he and I were looking through one of these books, and it was talking about, the book is essentially like 101 great questions, and it there's 101 questions where the authors go ask actual Christians who are in different sciences, as well as theologians, about God and science, and one of them was about where the first people came from, but it had like the whole evolutionary branch with like chimpanzees and gorillas or whatever. But then he was asking me about that because I was like, wait a minute, we just told him yesterday about Adam and Eve and now he's seeing this and I'm reading this. And our view of origins is different than how I was raised to view origins.
Okay.
And so we're choosing to raise Jake in a different Christian view of origins, but like C.S. Lewis and blah, blah, blah. But I'm getting confused as how to explain that to him because it's hard to explain things to a 4-year-old. But my question for you is, and we've similarly talked about this on podcast past, but you did not grow up with the same baggage that I grew up with. So how, I guess, was it taught to you as a child about the origins? And did you have any other big questions about that that would be useful for me to know, as I'm usually getting the brunt of most of his questions?
I think the answer is no. I don't remember if I ever had any big questions growing up. That's a,
she was like, well, you know, that's no questions a, here.
I don't know how to answer that, because I feel like that's also one of those things that in the moment it feels big. But I also think that him asking that one time is probably not going to be something that he remembers forever. Like, there's going to be continual teaching, and when he's taking classes and learning about evolution in school, that's when we would really be plugging in and talking about it and integrating, like, what you're learning about evolution. What does that mean with our faith? How do these two, how do you reconcile both these ideas? And how do you, how does evolution fit into the Bible, or vice versa, or whatnot?
Right.
So I think that, to that, those are things that we did not spend time on. What I remember reading and doing as a child was Berenstain Bears. And that was it.
Right. This is the problem I'm having, Joe, which I appreciate your feedback. But, like, so this happened in, like, a 1-2-3 succession of, like, he asked us that question about, like, the first parents. We talked about Adam and Eve and God and the garden. Then he and I were reading that book the next day about evolution and how it can, like, how Christians can be compatible with evolution. Then that afternoon, we were at the Perot Museum in that one exhibit talking about the origins of mankind, and he's asking me questions about that. And I'm like, I guess, like, I am in this, welcome podcast people. This is we could cut this out. It's fine. But I just don't know, like, how much do you tell a 4-year-old, you know, of, like, cause he does ask really deep questions, but yeah, to your point, I don't really think he knows, like, he's retaining much of the answer. And so I'm like, I mean, I could kind of, like, when he asked it, when the sex talk of, like, you and I have gone back and forth of, like, how much details do we give him about sex and all the stuff that goes into that at 4.
And we gave him every single detail.
But he hasn't asked us since. And I don't
we
know
We actually
how,
didn't give him any details.
I mean, we gave him some, gave him enough details.
We said, mommy and daddy make babies.
No, we didn't say that
like that,
right? But
basically,
I just think it's, I think that, like, for this, okay, I'm not trying to speak highly of myself, but parenting, I feel like it's been very easy so far. But the thing that I have been excited about parenting, but then also
terrified,
not terrified, I think just more confused, is because I can answer big questions. I think what's hard for me is, like, knowing the amount of information to give at the age level that he's at.
Yeah.
And that is, like, that's where I wrestle.
Yeah. And I think that's it's probably something that everybody wrestles with, because it took me until, like, sophomore, junior year to finally realize what education was. And
of college or high school?
Of high school. Okay. And let me walk you through,
yes,
this.
Please.
So, like, from third or fourth grade or whenever up until freshman or sophomore year, it seemed like every single year we were learning about the Egyptians, we were learning about the Tigris and the Euphrates and Mesopotamia. And every year I was like, guys, I've already learned this. Why are we wasting more time on this? Until finally I get to freshman or sophomore year. And I'm like, wait a second. They didn't tell me that last year. And you know what? They surely didn't tell me that when I was in fourth grade. okay, now I understand.
The because
there
blocks.
Is a building phase of like, there is little bits that you learn throughout. So,
right.
So where I'm going with that is I feel like education and professional educators, they are taught what all of that is and taught the idea of like how much people actually retain and how you go about teaching and how much is the right amount at which ages. Whereas nobody tells us parents this stuff. We don't get any right. of that information.
Well, and I think like we are in an interesting conundrum because we recognize scientific like discovery, for lack of a better term, but we also recognize the God of Abraham in our Christian faith. And so I feel like that is also a struggle too, because like I feel like you very rarely will I ever find myself in a situation where both are being represented at the same time in equal yeah. amounts. So it's yep. either like hardcore one side or hardcore the other. And so like it feels like we are blazing an unknown path, so to speak.
Yeah.
So with yep. my theologian brain and your, I say that joking, and your geology brain, maybe we can figure it out.
Yep. Well, I think there's also a level of childlike faith that
right.
that I
he
think
just
is
accepts
important.
Everything and doesn't have any questions.
Well, I think that's important to encourage and instill in him this childlike faith, or having a childlike faith in that the reason we have the segment of Joe Calms Down Alley is one of those things where I think I learned all of this science, right? And most people would say science disagrees with the Bible, but coming to a real faith later on in life, that was something that I had to reconcile. And I guess I've looked at it and say, okay, there are ways that you could reconcile something as simple as the age of the earth with the Bible. There's a lot of arm waving that goes on with that, but there's also, there are ways that you could hypothetically do it. And from there, there was a decision that I had to make of saying, do I trust God? Do I trust what he says? And do I trust who he is? And is this something that I'm not blindly accepting, but I will trust that that God is who he says he is. And even if the whole world, according to physics, looks totally different, like those both can be true. And I may not understand, but I can trust in that.
Right. And I think so, because a lot of the books that I read are about the Old Testament and it's like books by Christian scientists, because this is something that I was raised to be very hostile towards. And so I'm trying to like retrain my brain to not be hostile towards it, but recognize that God is the God of the Bible and the God of creation. And so ultimately they will be compatible when we get all the information. But one of the things I always find is helpful is in all the books, they all reiterate that the Old Testament was written for us, not to us, and recognizing that God was it's all inspired and God breathed, but it was God breathed to a certain people in a certain culture in a certain time. And then also, whenever Allie's freaking out, I don't have all the answers, and I won't have all the answers for Jake either, is to recognize that we know who Jesus is, and we know what Jesus did, and that is like my recalibration point of being like, I don't understand how any of this stuff fits. I don't have all the answers. No one on earth has all the answers, but we do know who Jesus says that he was, and he recognize the Old Testament scriptures as important. And so I just need to trust that it will all be explained one day.
Yep.
But I think we have different backgrounds, so that's just a lot I think harder for me than it is for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I agree. And it's a process and it takes time. And I think to me, that is the important part of helping Jake accept that it's okay not to have all the answers. And most importantly, to know, like, we can trust God and we can trust who he is and everything else, like science, we can trust that. I don't know how to say it. Like, we can trust the data. And even if those two don't seem like they are working together, like, that is probably us not understanding. It's not that that one or the other's wrong. It's just that we don't have the right. We don't have all the information. Right.
But in science, two things I want to say is, one, like, I agree. I was raised with absolute certainty, which obviously when you believe in, you know, a God, you want to be certain about it. But there's a certain like humility in being uncertain that I think is a skill I was never taught, which is something I hope to teach Jake, is that, like, we know there are some truths that we can stand firm on, but there's a lot of things that you know, we see through a mirror darkly or whatever it is. But also, Mr. Scientist over there, science is not designed to disprove God. That's not the question it's asking.
Correct.
All it is making observations and hypotheses based on observable patterns and repeatable patterns. Correct. So that's the thing that I had to learn, is that, to your point, like, the data is the data, but I mean, when you're talking about theology and religion and God and the metaphysics of that, that is on a completely different level of testing and observations that science can even, they're not on the same level.
I would dare to say that any really good scientist, or like one that is humble and like seasoned, mature scientist,
right,
would go as far to say that proving or disproving God is an untestable theory.
100%.
But if you're a scientist who thinks like that's your goal, like you yourself are probably lost.
Right.
Or
you're asking the wrong questions.
You are asking a question and trying to build a hypothesis that can't be tested. And that's not good. That's not the scientific theory. That's not following the scientific process.
Right. Right. And that's where I guess like the culture warring goes both ways, where you have people on like the science side of things who can go very anti-faith for personal reasons, and then you can have people on the faith side who go anti-science for fearful reasons.
Yep.
And it's that does not
actually, doesn't bode well.
Sorry, that was quite the diatribe. It was
is there more you wanted to talk about?
There was one. There was supposed to be a very natural segue into our audience question.
Oh, did our audience have a question?
But it really was like things I had was meaning to talk to you about, but you've been really busy this week, so we hadn't talked about it. So, you know, welcome 12 people to listen to an Allie Joe conversation.
What else is there?
We were asked the question, and it's sort of related, which is why it was supposed to be a natural segue of we are getting great questions from one person. So everyone else needs to step it up and ask us questions. Because this one person is just like doing awesome and asking us good questions.
If you want to be on the show, you need to ask good questions.
Right. Also, we haven't mentioned this in a while, but you can, we've always done this. If you review the podcast in Apple Podcasts, you can ask a question in the review and then we will talk about your question on the air.
And you can also send us a hat or a koozie for our Lacroix, or you can send us a boba gift card or ice cream gift card. Also, you can send us something and we'll talk about you on the air.
Also, we're going to get on Patreon.
We're going to get on Patreon. No, we're not. So you can buy t-shirts with my face on it.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine?
Anyway. I could imagine.
Oh my gosh.
Just imagine me with like the mullet.
Just text me if you have a question.
on a t-shirt. I should make some good old fashioned mullet t-shirts.
Do it. Anyway, are you ready for the audience question?
Yeah, let's hear
it. Okay. Are humans animals?
Yes.
Why?
Because like there's six kingdoms of life. We are in
give
the
it to me.
Animal
what are the six
kingdom.
Kingdoms?
What are
it's
the six
actually
kingdoms?
Animalia.
We are yeah, animal for all those speaking English instead of Latin.
I just wanted to sound smarter for once.
So let's see. There's the animal kingdom, the fungi. Plant kingdom, the fungi. There is the fish and the birds,
aquamarine,
and the reptiles. I think that's it. Oh no, then there's like the bacterias, the single cells.
But dinosaurs are more related to the birds than they are to reptiles.
Yeah,
interesting.
I think that I don't know. I may be wrong. There may be well. I may be wrong on the number of kingdoms. I am definitely right that dinosaurs are more related to birds, but there may not be seven kingdoms. But if there are, those are the seven.
Right. So what makes humans different than mere mammals?
The soul. And somebody
so
said
you don't
the
think animals
thumbs.
Are going to heaven. The soul and the opposable. Someone said? Just someone?
Somebody.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Our opposable thumbs are special.
So do you think God actually looks like us? Like when you think when it says like made in the image of God, you think that that is talking about like what we physically look like?
I think it's more the soul portion. Like I think it's the emotional, the spiritual, the mind portion. I don't. See, so this is getting into
metaphysics?
A deeper question because there's one group out there. I always forget which group, but they're hung up on this idea of God the Mother. And
who is this? Where
I
have
forget.
You been? Because I sort of know what you're talking about, but where have you heard about this stuff?
No,
you don't listen
was,
to the podcast.
This was
I
a
listen
while
to.
Ago. I was walking.
Oh, you mean
at
like that
SMU.
One song by Ariana Grande?
No. I was walking at SMU and somebody stopped me and he's like, hey, do you know about God? I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's hear what you got. Let's talk about it. And then he's like, have you ever heard about God the Mother? I'm
like
no.
Gaia, like spirit of the earth, or they're talking about
no. Like there's like certain verses in the Bible that they flipped open and talked about. And one of them, I forget which ones, but I was like, that's weird.
The Holy Spirit is a feminine Hebrew word.
Okay. So then I was like, okay, that's cool. Well, I've got somewhere to be, so I need to go.
Right.
And then I went back and looked it up. And obviously, like, God is not human.
Right. I don't think he's
God
gendered
not,
in the way that we're gendered.
God does not have a gender.
Right. But hear me say this, and like people, I'm very much as feminist as I could probably possibly be. However, Jesus refers to God as Father.
Yeah, Abba
and
Father.
He's always referred to with male pronouns. Yeah. And so despite the fact that I do not think that he is gendered in the way that we are gendered, and I think that when he created mankind in his image in male and female, he created them that they both represent aspects of God. And so separate from each other, we are not the fullness of God, but together we are the fullness of God.
Which means God is both male and female.
Right. I have to give credit where credit's due. And if Jesus refers to God as the Father, I can't really argue with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But who knows what that actually means.
Yeah. Like, is that...
I don't get too hung up on it, truthfully. But some people get really hung up on it.
Yeah. I don't get hung up on it.
I don't get up
on it. But... The idea of God the Mother with God the Father and God the Son and God the Holy Spirit. That is not three in one. Now we're talking about a quad-une God.
I just, sorry, this
that
is...
That I don't think is right.
Wait, sorry, go back. What?
If there is a fourth member of the Trinity. Wait. Now it's a quinity.
What are you talking about?
God the Mother.
Oh, Father, Spirit, Son. The Trinity is never outlined in Scripture. That's
no,
like,
that's like a thing from
like
the...
we've right.
From the tribunal of 2056.
Is it really 2056? Did
not
you...
256.
Dang, you know the year?
I don't know.
Wow, gosh, impressive.
Probably not. It's probably wrong.
I lost my train of thought. Oh, no. And so I'm reading this book. I don't remember what it's called, but it's like Ethics of the Old Testament because I'm a nerd. And it was saying like this verse in Numbers, just as, you know, God is compassionate, God, blah, blah, lists a bunch of qualities of God. But the word compassionate is actually the Hebrew word used for talking about a woman, a mother caring for a child.
Ooh, that's spicy.
So maybe, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, people would be, like, drilling into, like, the Hebrew words and would be pulling up.
Yeah.
But you do see that. You see a lot of
yep.
feminine characteristics.
Yeah. Jesus wept.
Jesus
that
wept.
That is 100% feminine.
Right. Well, I mean, in our modern ears, I don't think it was that bizarre in ancient...
Males weeping.
Ancient culture. Sure. Have you seen David? He even told Jonathan that he loved Jonathan more than any other, like, he's ever loved a woman.
Feminine.
Okay. Don't even. Okay. Last but not least, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the finale of The Last of Us.
Stop this episode
stop
right
the episode
now.
Immediately, because we're about to discuss Joseph.
We don't have that much time to discuss,
I know,
though.
So we're just going to have hot take, and then we'll end. Do you think Joel did the right thing?
Yes and no.
Explain.
I think he did the right thing in that he was stopping the people who were taking away Ellie's choice.
Mm-hmm.
But then he himself did not give her a choice, in which case he became the people he was stopping.
So do you think
for
he,
a different reason?
Right. So do you think that it was mainly just the lying?
Yeah.
That's the problem?
Yeah. I mean... The rest of it, you know, you could argue was good or bad.
Right.
But I don't think, like, everybody should have a choice.
Right. Right. I agree with you. I never can condone killing. But however, the science was shoddy. I'm sorry. It did not make sense to me why they were like, this is the only girl who's ever survived. We're going to definitely kill her. Because, you know, there's no possible reason why we would need to keep her alive to continue testing. So that was weird to me.
Yeah.
But then also, I don't think she would have made... I don't think she was in the mental state to make... I think she was mentally impaired and could, like, at that point, because of the PTSD she was experiencing, to where I don't think she would have been able to make a good choice and good conscience. Until she recovered emotionally from the prior episode.
And I think there's just, I agree. There was a lot of shoddy science there. There's a lot
And that's
there
coming
that,
from me with no scientific background whatsoever.
There's a lot there that you could have figured out something. In fact, how many people, and this is like, feel free to call me out here, but how many people have gone and had brain tumors that have gotten operations and then lived?
A lot.
How many people prior did we have frontal lobe things where right. you remove them?
Right. Here's my question, and this is something I saw on the internet. Vaccines don't work against fungus infections.
It's true.
So that was the first thing where I was confused about. Is that if it is in fact a fungal infection, which they have made it very clear it is, shouldn't they be looking at an antifungal situation, not a vaccine? Or is, you know, or were they just calling it a vaccine, but they were talking about antifungal?
Yeah, that's...
In that case, they'd want... They should be keeping it alive, which you would think, they okay, the best way to keep this thing alive is by keeping her alive.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, like, why can't you just call it the right thing?
Anyway, I know what happens in season two, and I'm not happy about it, but...
Well, shouldn't have gotten those spoilers.
I did. I spoiled myself on purpose because I've become too emotionally attached to these characters. So I have to know what happens or I will be depressed for a week upon finding out any sort of situation that's happening.
That is the beauty of being me. I don't get emotionally attached to fictional characters.
This is why I don't read fiction. It's too emotionally complicated for me. So I stick to the nonfiction. I stick to my theology books where I can't get emotionally connected to anything other than Jesus Christ. And I live my days blissfully unaware of the emotional trauma happening in imaginary worlds. Anyway, that's it. That's all I got. Do we have a sponsor? Are we sponsorless?
We do. We do have a sponsor.
We do?
The sponsor is not Boba Tea. Although, sure? I wish it could be.
Because we spend far too much money
wink,
on it.
Wink, nudge, nudge. If anybody wants to send us a sponsorship, send us some boba tea. No, our sponsor this week is Cart.com. They're not actually our sponsor. But I was down in Houston last week and got a few new sponsorships. I was walking around the floor at CeraWeek talking to people saying, hey, I got a podcast. Come be on my show, hit me up. And next thing you know, I get a bunch of hats. Granted, they were coming from your sister, Haley, but got one from Cart.com. Now, Cart.com, I think that they sell carts. I think that if you want to have your own grocery cart or shopping cart and just have it at home, you know, in case you want to reenact the jackass of our childhood.
Oh my God, you just cussed on a podcast.
No.
Joseph that Francis Bateer.
That is the
Bateer.
Name of the show.
I'm going to, no, but this is the power of editing.
That's the name of the show.
I'm going to take that little snippet and I'm going to add it to random parts throughout this episode. It's going to be glorious.
Okay, well, that sounds lovely. So, if you want to recreate those scenes, if you want to learn how to make your own new things with a cart, like rolling down hills, or if you want to just, you know, have a cart for carting things around, go to cart.com. Buy yourself a cart.
That's not how it works.
Well, you know, this isn't a real sponsorship, so I can say whatever I want.
Okay, cool.
But cart.com. Check it out. Go get yourself a cart.
And with that.
With that, we got to end. This is a really long episode.
How long is it?
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We're going on 1 hour and 3 minutes. So, thanks, everybody. This one will be longer. But if you like these long episodes, leave us a review and tell us you like them. And we'll just talk longer. Because we always have more to talk about.
Okay, bye.
Okay, but here we go.